with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Welcome to this Wednesday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Jesus, here we go again. News out of the coal fields. Two more miners dead in West Virginia. And people waiting at the gate. And our correspondent tells me that the coal company won't tell them who it is that's dead. A bulldozer operator apparently hit a gas well and was incinerated instantly. Such is the price of our energy lust in this country. Such is the price of the money lust. The love for money that permeates Massey Energy, for it was a Massey mine again. But when people die at Massey Mines, it's no big deal. Right. Not to Don Blankenship. That's just the cost of doing business. Or, you know, perhaps his business partner, Wilbur H. Ross, Jr. Billionaire bottom feeder financier. It's the cost of doing business. Blood is the cost of doing the coal business. Blood is the cost of doing business in the coal industry when you hate unions more than you care about people. Right? Yeah, pretty much. You know, I sit and I make plans for what the show is going to be, and at the very end, hey, another dead miner. And it's, well, you know, it's news, but, you know, again, MSHA rules say that it only matters, it's only important if five or more miners die. And then there's the story. I found it. And it's heart-rent. Well, I mean, no, it's happy news, really. 72, you know, I mentioned it last night. 72 miners at a potash mine in Canada were rescued. 72, this from the Associated Press. 72 Canadian potash miners Monday walked away from an underground fire and toxic smoke after being locked down overnight in airtight chambers packed with enough oxygen, food, and water for several days. 72 human beings and a bunch of greed-headed anti-labor, anti-worker, anti-union freaks couldn't provide the wherewithal to save a dozen. Couldn't save 12. Couldn't save 2 at Alma number 1. But on the other hand, it was a very interesting little piece of political theater we saw unfold in the Senate of the United States today. Oh, I've ranted and I've raved and I've railed against Senator Byrd for his duplicitous, mendacious vote in favor of cloture and in favor of Samuel Alito. Oh, I've complained that he sold us out, sold us up the river. Guess what? Found out why today. Found out why today. Because lo and behold, you know, it's my habit. I get up and turn on C-SPAN on the computer and roll a little, you know, as the old saying goes, roll tape. Throw a line out into the water to see what might get hung up on the hook. And what do I find? What do I find but this?
We now can speak with some certainty about what contributed to the tragedies at Alma Mines that killed 14 coal miners. We know that these tragedies have highlighted gross weaknesses in mine emergency preparedness and the failure of leadership at the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration to get tough.
Yeah, see, it was almost enough to make me cry. It was Senator Byrd standing there talking about mine safety and talking tough and talking penalties, punishing. He was ferocious. He said we must make rules that will punish these rogue coal companies if they will not treat their workers decently and if they will not attend to mine safety rules. We must punish them. And he, you know, got all biblical and stood there, hear me! Hear me, O Israel! Hear me! He did that. And introduced legislation mandating safety reforms in the coal industry. Mandating safety reforms that the United Mine Workers have been screaming for years. To which he has been deaf. Until now. I hate it when the bright lights come on and I see filthy, blood-soaked politics for what it is. I hate it. And I saw it. Yes, sirree, I saw it today. I saw it on display because you know what the conversation was, don't you? It was a little phone call.
Senator Byrd, I just wanted to let you know I really value your support for my buddy Sam Alito. And I tell you what, if you can keep a filibuster from happening and get my boy on the bench there, we might be able to help you out a little bit with some with some new mine safety rules.
Now, does that sound crazy to you, or does that sound plausible? Does that sound like something that could happen? Oh, and Harry Reid, who couldn't get a filibuster together, he followed up to you know, in that little mealy-mouthed voice of it. My
father was a coal miner. My father was a coal miner, and so we know that coal is very dangerous, and I'll do what I can to help you, Senator Byrd, to help you get this legislation through.
Yeah, okay. Senator Reid is the what leader? Minority. Where was Bill Frist? Where was the majority whip? Where was anybody who could really offer meaningful help with this legislation? Nowhere to be found. But, by Jove, he's introduced legislation on behalf of himself and Senator Rockefeller for safe coal mines now that the horse is gone and the barn door is closed. It was politics in its purest, rottenest form. It was negotiation from a point of weakness. And what's more, here's the best part. That whole business, we'll see what we can't do about maybe getting you some mine safety reform. Who did Senator Byrd just vote to confirm to the Supreme Court? Yeah. Sammy the Sleaze. What has Sammy the Sleaze ruled in the past? What has he said? Well, he said that regulatory schemes and safety schemes are unconstitutional. So the Republicans are snickering up their sleeves because they know that no sooner will this legislation get passed, and hell, maybe even signed by George W. Pinhead, that Massey will appeal it. And hey, Massey may even be represented by Robert Byrd's campaign manager, Ned Rose. Sure. The guy who is appealing coal companies having to pay taxes in West Virginia. He appealed it to the Supreme Court and lost. They're planning to take it to the Supreme Court of the United States, saying that it's a violation of the Commerce Clause for West Virginia to tax coal. That's, and yeah, not kidding.
That's Senator Byrd's campaign, you know, fundraising manager, who was counsel on that case. Maybe he can represent Massey when this new statute comes down, and Massey wants to complain that it's unconstitutional to force coal mines to do the right thing by their workers. Do you see how it works here in the land of King Coal? Do you see how it works here in West Virginia, where we still owe our soul to the company store? You do. It's just such a damn shame that Robert Byrd didn't. Because he thinks he's dealing with honorable people. Arguably, and I've never stepped back from this, arguably he's an honorable man. And he thinks he's dealing with honorable people on the other side of the aisle like he did 40 years ago. But he's not. He's dealing with killers. He's dealing with backstabbers. He's dealing with the worst kind of backroom smoky Judases. And I have a feeling he got taken for a big old ride today. This way to the egress. This way to the egress. Where does it ever end? This is Head On. Do you know the phone number? 877, the number 4, Head On. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid. Your mama's gone away and your dad's gone to stay. Nobody but the baby. Go to sleep, you little 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 baby. Everybody's gone in the cotton and the corn. Didn't leave nobody but the baby. You're a sweet little baby. You're a sweet. You're a sweet little baby. You're a sweet little baby. Honey and the rock and the sugar don't stop. Gonna bring a bottle to the baby.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Speaking of thievery,
yes.
Just wanted to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, I just thought it was so.
Oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway.
Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
That's been on my mind. Mexican war, I think. Cross the street from a Catholic church. Then I wiped out my revolver. Now put under my bag in the shade. I shot the morning in the back with my red wings on. Told the sun.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I want to share something with you. After last night's Regurgitation Fest, the State of the Union, I generally refrain from reading to you, but sometimes I can't help myself. This comes from a website called Thought Criminal, a blog. And it's Thought Crime. .com only, where you would have the I in crime, it's the number one. You got that? ThoughtCr1me.com/blog. The author writes, State of the Union, Schmate of the Union. Once upon a day so dreary, while I waited, weak and weary, over many a sharp and spurious network show of spin and bore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone rudely rapping, rapping at the chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, rapping at the chamber door, "'only this, and nothing more. Ah, distinctly I remember, it was after bleak December, aft each separate I-vote member wrought Alito's upon the floor.' Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow filibuster votes. No, sorrow, sorrow for the losing score. For the rare and radiant cloture, which we had the losing score, splitting here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before. So that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at the chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at the chamber door, this, that it is, and nothing more.' And presently, my soul grew stronger. Clicked the remote and volume turned up as my brains implore, but the fact is I was no mooring. I was prepping to be snoring, already knew that he'd be boring, boring on the chamber floor, that I scarce wanted to hear him. Here they opened wide the door. Bush was there, and nothing more. Deep into the TV I sat peering. Long I sat there, wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams I knew no Bush had dreamed before. But the clapping was unbroken, and those facades gave no token, and the only words there spoken were the whispered words, "No more?" This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the words, "No more?" It was Bush, and nothing more. Back to CNN I was turning, all my soul within me burning. Soon again I heard him talking, something louder than before. "Surely," said he, "surely the war on Terra is not forgotten. Surely I mention it often, and do not let folks ignore. Let this crowd be still a moment, and do not let folks ignore. War on Terra, nothing more." On TV, Bush went discussing Terra in order to frighten America, as he mentioned evil Axis, AIDS, and justice under law. Not the least small logic used he. Might as well have gone and snoozed he. But with smirky smile, he abused them, anyone, against his war. With that smirky smile, he abused those fighting against illegal war. Smirked and smiled and little more. Bush continued his reviling, while his face continued smiling, not the grave and stern decorum of presidents gone before. "Though thy face be smiling, smirking," I said, "surely you must still be working, representing and not shirking people and your duty. That is what you're for. Tell me what you're doing for us citizens you're fighting for," quoth George Bush then. Nevermore. Much I marveled as I listened, as his speech, horrid, I christened, though its meaning never reached me, little relevancy bore. For I cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was cursed with such a president on the floor. Man or woman pon the rostrum at the front of the house floor with such excuse as nevermore. But that George Bush standing lonely on that little stage spoke only blather, as though his soul could only talking points outpour. Nothing further did he utter. There was no fuss and was no flutter, till I scarcely could help mutter, "This country's friend you are no more. In 3 years I hope you'll leave me. I can't wait no longer for being rid of nevermore." Startled at the peace he'd broken by reply so badly spoken, "Doubtless," said I, "what he utters is his only stock and store. Who else could say Medicaid and smile wide as the dirge is played? Forgotten ones and ones with AIDS suffered, fought their own hopeless war, till their hope died and abandoned, faced upon his long closed door. Would he help them? Nevermore. But never fear, you lost and helpless, pending on his skills and talents. Don't lose heart. His war on terror will drain you all still more. Even while you're weeping, crying, he'll take our cash and start more spying. Spying, prying, lying, and to Iran he'll send the corps. He'll give you this, and nothing more." This, I'm afraid, was the one lesson of that hour he spent addressin' this great nation, which he'd caused many to abhor. If you're low, or if you're hurtin', or if you are not Halliburton, if you're needy, he won't help you, 'cause you're simply poor. Bush won't help you. Nevermore. An excellent piece of work by Thought Criminal. And we'll give out the web address if I can only see it on the browser one more time. And there we go. Yeah. ThoughtCrime.com. Only where the I in crime would be is the numeral one. ThoughtCrime.com. Tell you what, let's take our bottom of the hour break. Man, this stuff flies by, doesn't it? I'm Bob Kincaid, and well, you know what you're listening to. You ought to be used to it by now. If you're new to the program, by God, welcome. This is a little dust-up we have every night from roughly 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and we call it Head On. Email, of course, you're welcome to send as well. The email address is bob@headonradio.com. You know, we take semaphores or telegrams. Well, I'm told Western Union doesn't do telegrams anymore. And, well, you know, you can stand out on the porch and scream, too. But at any rate, we'll be back.
She came from Providence, born in Rhode Island, where the old world shadows hang heavy in the air. She packed her hopes and dreams like a refugee, just as her father came across the sea. She heard about a place people were smiling. They spoke about the red man's ways, how they loved the land. They came from everywhere to the great divide.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering, pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
So, we all sat and did our best not to regurgitate last night as we listened to Dear Leader's little speech. And, you know, as far as I can tell, you know, there was a lot of crap in it. I mean, it was a crap fest. But more than anything, if you in wandering around upper Blagoslovakia today, one thing caught people more than any other, and that was the whole. I call for Congress to enact a total ban on animal-human hybrids, animal-human cloning, which immediately just grabbed most of it. The first thing most of us thought of was the Island of Dr. Moreau and Dog Boy and, you know, that, you know, Rat Man. There were references to the X-Files. But it's not nearly as simple as all that. No, he doesn't just throw that garbage out there to make us scream and run in the streets. No, there's a point behind it, and our good friend Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org sort of pinned it down. You know, and you've probably figured it out by now yourself. Where did some of the first, and our medical and biology and zoology folks will know this, Where did insulin to treat diabetes first come from? Beef? Wasn't it beef? And where did, replacement valves for leaky heart valves in human beings? Where did that come from? Pigs? Pork? So it's not at all inconceivable that medical science in the future could be able to, by using a little bit of tiny, itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny little bit of human DNA, make parts inside animals that could be used to better the lives of sick human beings the world over. But just like the Bush administration didn't like the Oregon-assisted suicide law, and because they've got some crazy belief that Jesus wants us all to suffer real good, so they had to go after the Oregon-assisted suicide law, just like they believed that Terry Schiavo had to lay there and be a vegetable a few more years, George Bush quietly announced last night his assault on the sick and the dying in America. It's not enough that he won't let any, you know, that he has stopped stem cell research dead in its tracks so that
Well, people like Robert Byrd suffering from Parkinson's, or Michael J. Fox suffering from Parkinson's, or Muhammad Ali suffering from Parkinson's can go on suffering. No, that wasn't enough for George Bush. Now he's after the future of science. All that happy crap about, we're going to have more science classes. We're going to teach more mathematics. All that garbage, and then he just throws that little, that little bit of nothing in there, and a total ban on animal-human hybrids. You see how they work? We were sitting around going, ha ha, he wants to ban dog boy. Yeah, this is Robin the Bat Boy from the Weekly World News. Yeah, what a hoot. He's crazy. He ain't crazy. He's evil. I mean, we're talking about, real Warner Brothers cartoon Castle on the Mountaintop with the neon sign. Yeah, mad scientist, crazy. Mad scientist, crazy. That's him. Evil, 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 evil. So, the war on civilization, the war on culture, the war on life. Yeah, we're pro-life. No, you're pro-fetus or something. Because the life that is out there and is suffering now, he doesn't give a tinker's damn about. But you know that.
She's not a Christian!
Yeah, exactly. Of course, I was thinking, I was thinking more along the lines of gargoyles and psychics. When, animal-human hybrids, you could wind up with gargoyles. Yeah, let's go to the phones. Bob is with us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on.
Hey.
How are you?
I have a question for you.
I'll try.
I have a question. Would you like to meet my son?
Why, certainly. You got him handy?
Yeah, I do.
Great.
Hey, Mikey, get your butt out here and talk to a man. I want him. He's a young man like you.
Oh, okay.
And he's been in a patch doing the oil field thing.
Yeah, we got some oil patch folks here in this state, too.
Yeah, digging for oil and getting gas and lots of dead bodies. I heard about that today, and I had so much anger, but it's not even anger anymore. It's got to be something else. We got to turn this back and bring you young folk on, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm going to introduce you to my son, Michael.
Okay.
And he does a lot of things, but I'd just like to introduce you to my Mikey.
Okay.
He's kind of... He got a bit of me and you, or a bit of me and you, or you and me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a lot of Malloy in him. That's a Mikey on my side of the fence. Okay?
Well,
I'm
going
to introduce you to him. Here he is. His name is Michael.
All right.
Matson.
Okay.
Here he is.
Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Your dad called the show a couple of weeks ago, and we've gotten to be good friends.
That's good. He's a good man.
Yeah, he is. He is. We really appreciate his straightforward talk and his fighting spirit.
Oh yeah, yeah. We had a incident up here a couple days ago. A driller dropped the blocks on a casing crew hand. And
oh golly.
Yeah, it's shit up here is just. Yeah, a lot of inexperienced drillers out there, a lot of things happening.
Are the operating engineers big out there?
They pretty much sit in their shack.
Mm.
Don't do a whole lot on the rig floor. Pusher's always out there, doing, basically pushing us along.
So where is it that you, you don't think of North Dakota as being oil country, or at least I didn't. But
it's pretty big up here.
Oh, really?
Pretty much what keeps Williston afloat.
Well, I'll be darned. I had no idea. You learn something new every day. Is it oil, or mostly oil, or is it gas?
Oil and gas, both.
Okay, who's...
A lot of H2S.
Independent producers or big companies?
There's, I believe, over 20 companies operating up here. We've got close to 40 rigs drilling, and 27 supposed to be moving up here, within the next 6 months.
So is it something? I mean, does it go into? Is there a pipeline nearby? Or
they got pipelines strung everywhere.
Where does it go to, Mike?
A lot of our oil, I believe, is pretty much exported. Either it goes to Canada or, I'm not exactly sure. They kind of keep that under the wraps.
But well, yeah.
Most of it's, pipelined into the big tanks and then shipped out. You know,
how long you been doing it?
In the oil field, I started probably in 96 running drill bit. Then I got out of it for a little bit, and this last year I ran directional tools. A year and a half I ran those gyros.
Yeah.
And, I've seen a lot of crazy shit out there happening that, it's a pretty dangerous place to work.
Well, yeah, it absolutely is. Are you under, as far as safety is concerned, are you under OSHA or... who monitors your safety issues, Mike?
OSHA. That'd be the biggest thing. I've never actually seen an OSHA hand on any of these rigs. You know, they have their own safety hand. The companies that operate up here, generally, Neighbors Drilling has their dedicated safety hands. But that's about it. That's,
well, you're kind of, I mean, you're in. It's hard work. Gosh, I hate to run around quoting Bush like that. But what's the sentiment among the folks working the rigs? I mean, is there a sense that that America's in trouble or after the State of the Union last night? What kind of scuttlebutt runs around in the operations?
I'm out of that area now. I work on computers. A lot of unhappiness, that's for sure. A lot of guys, they don't mind it. You know, they're making money, but it's only going to last X amount of years.
How long have those fields been up and running, and what kind of lifespan do they have?
Oh, they've been going since the 60s. They really haven't hit anything where it's become a dry hole yet.
So we hear about, are you familiar with the term peak oil?
Peak oil, yeah, yeah.
The idea that, we're heading for a global oil crisis. What's your sense on that?
I can't see, with how they're drilling these wells, how close they're placing them, that they would be worried about it.
So is where you are, is that just an is that an extension of the oil fields that we hear about in Saskatchewan and
basically the Williston Basin? It stretches from Canada all the way down into parts of Colorado and shoot as far over as western Montana.
Okay.
It's everyone they've drilled that I was on produced.
This is kind of shocking to me. I admit my ignorance on this. Like I said, I'd never thought about that being the oil patch per se. You learn a little something new every day.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, we sure do enjoy chatting with your dad, and he's awful proud of you. So it's a real pleasure to talk with you.
Is he a liar? He's not a liar. here's Bob.
All right, you take care, Mike. Pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure talking to you. You met him?
Yeah, sounds like a fine fella.
Hey, you met him, you know who he is, because it's in your heart, son.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. It's in Agnes's. It's in her voice. It's in her genes. Boy, it goes right down to the bottom.
Well,
he ain't no liar.
And no.
He just laid it out there.
Sounds like you did a good job, you and Glenda.
No, we didn't do nothing. All we did is raise up a man. And your daddy and your mommy raised up a man. And there is a time, there's a time in this nation for a man to be raised up, okay?
That's right.
One that isn't afeard that Jesus is going to take him back any time, okay?
Yeah.
One ain't afeard that life is too short, because life is what we make of it. We just do. And I love your lady. Oh, God, I love her.
Isn't she wonderful?
I would just love to just sit down with her, you know, and she could, you know, make up a dinner or whatever, and we could sit together, you know, and you could really, no, that man that you just talked to is my son,
mm-hmm.
and he has been in that hole, okay?
Yeah.
And he has watched people.
Yeah.
Not, what do they call them? They're just wogs, or what do they call those? They're non-people or something like
well,
that.
Well, that's what it's coming to. That's where it's been, sure.
Yeah, yeah. And they're trying to take away a nation. And, hey, guess what?
What's that?
I just introduced you to a man.
That's right.
And, Bob, I knew that from your voice, that you were a man. You're not one of those wogs. You never have been. Good God, boy, you were born with two left feet.
That's right.
Okay, let's turn left and get the hell out of this bullshit. Oh,
yeah.
Did I say something?
That's, we cut Mike a little slack tonight, so, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Mike is... Hey, he's a man.
And sure, absolutely.
In there, like, God, they lost, what, two today?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that we know of. In two separate places, Bob. Two separate mines. I called one of the TV stations in Charleston, tried to verify a little bit of it. They said two separate deaths at two separate locations. And a mine fire yesterday in Harrison County, West Virginia.
But these are men that are trying to give these, I don't know what they are. They're not people. They're something else. They're in the fast lane. They're just, you know, using energy. They don't conserve energy. They don't care about energy. They just use. And
well,
they
yeah.
use and they use and they use. And I'm tired of users. I'm tired of being used.
Right. Well, I mean, it's like the Exxon story we had last night, Bob. ExxonMobil's everything they took in, not their profits, but their whole net income,
God.
It was bigger than the gross. It was bigger than the gross product of Saudi Arabia.
Gross product of the. Okay.
I know.
I got close, almost at the end.
Yeah. See. Yeah, you can control it.
I got close. I can. Yeah, but hey, they have used every human being on this planet, and my boy. Oh, he's a man, and he has strength, and he has courage, okay? Now it's time for this nation to find if they have manhood. What is that thing at Malloy plays? That was my darling that played that, okay?
Yeah.
My darling, and I think you sleep with her every night. What's her name again?
The lovely Agnes.
Oh, I'm sure she's low. Oh,
hey, Bob, we've got to hit it and take a quick break before the hour runs out. Always a pleasure.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
I always use you up.
Oh, now.
I always use you up.
No, we just got to keep it rolling, Bob.
No, I know that, but I always use you up. And hey, bring this to them, okay?
Yeah.
That there are people bringing energy to them. That die for their energy. They die for their energy so they can keep their lights on.
Leave them on. Yeah, leave the lights on.
They can run from the other room and the bathroom, and they can flush their toilets because we give them energy. Well, guess what? Energy is running out.
Yeah, that's right. We got to hit it, Bob. You take care now, all right?
Love you much.
Son. Later, man. See
you. I'll see you later. Bye.
All right.
Okay.
This is Head On.
In the deep, dark hills of eastern Kentucky, that's the place where I traced my bloodline. And it's there I read on a hillside gravestone, you'll never leave Harlan alive. Oh, my
Delay. Indicted for criminal money laundering. Pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts. 100 flights aboard company jets. 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels. $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom Delay? It's time for Delay to resign.
Last week's Fourth Estate Radio, Bruce had this to say.
Latham is a member Latham is a member of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee. Okay. He was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute. It sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy.
Well,
maybe saying to him that he would give him a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting. Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for Fourth Estate Radio. Get the details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
All right, 7 minutes before the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. And coming up in the next hour, I don't know if you caught this or not last night in the CNN alleged coverage of the State of the Union. Paula Zahn. Oh, my God. Like I said, we'll get to it in the next hour. Right now, Peter's on hold. Hey, Peter, you're head on. Thanks for calling.
Good evening, Bob. Good evening, Agnes. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing great.
Good. Hi, Peter.
I'm glad to hear it. I was awfully sorry to hear about the additional death today.
It's just going to keep happening.
Well, what is the general feeling in West Virginia right now about the governor's request to close all the mines? Is the undercurrent that people think that's a good idea?
You're throwing something new at me, Peter.
Yeah, nobody's discussing it yet.
No, well, I mean, no. I mean, Manchin called for the mines to be closed?
Yes.
When? I mean, how did I let this one? I'm ashamed.
I'm so sorry. I had come across it at some point today. I think it was in Yahoo that the governor at West Virginia had called for all of the mines to be closed so that there could be inspections and or some sort of meeting of the minds about what the problem was, because 16 people had died so far. I know where I heard it now. It was on one of the Alphabet Network's evening news. It was an ABC, NBC, CBS thing. I toggled between them to see what the masses are being misinformed on. In any case, one of the newscasters, after mentioning there were 16 deaths, mentioned that the governor had called for that.
Well, I'm going to have to look into that, Peter. If you could find a link, we would certainly appreciate you shipping that to me.
Yeah, I'll be glad to shoot that over to you later.
Certainly,
I can locate it somewhere. I mean, you know, I spent a huge number of years of my life wasted doing drugs, but I don't think I'm so bad off that I hallucinated that. I'm just positive he said it. I'm positive he did.
Well, I wouldn't. I don't know. I think at this point something's got to happen because it's turning. You know, this isn't just a little rash. I mean, you know, you've always heard that thing where like celebrity deaths come in threes. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
This isn't that. This is something that is endemic to the system right now because, well, Joe, let's put it this way. The governor can shut down the mines. He can do, I mean, he can, one thing will change this and one thing only. And that because MSHA regulations are worthless unless you've got the inspectors to enforce them. Like our buddy Wayne said a couple of nights ago, while the Republicans were screaming about Al Gore's going to get your guns and John Kerry's going to come take your Bible, George Bush was quietly taking away our mine inspectors. So we can have all the regulations in the world. If we don't have the inspectors to enforce them, it's worthless. And now we've got Alito on the bench, and he believes that, mine safety regulations are passe.
Well, you know, it's absolutely true.
The one thing that's going to change anything, Peter, is getting the United Mine Workers into these non-union mines and start saving some lives.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Bob. These people are so non-reality based, the government in general. And the reason is because, you know, people talk about having another political party that, you know, the Democrats are not good and the Republicans are not good and we need another party because the Green Party isn't going over the top and getting a lot of voters, blah, blah, blah. But, Bob, we do have another party, and that party is called the Christocrats, the Christianocrats.
Yeah.
And that party is simply hiding behind the Republican Party. What that party is all about, it has absolutely nothing to do with what's good for you and I and regulation and trying to do what government should be doing. It's all about who's in the bedroom and who's getting an abortion and animal human hybrids. You know, they're the most unpatriotic people on the planet. They're unpatriotic to the core because they reject the fundamental premises of freedom and individualism and pluralism that gave birth to the Constitution to begin with.
Well, they don't. Yeah, let's put it this way. They hate America, okay? I mean, we've been accused of that. These guys have put forward the proof for it. You know, George Bush hauled out Social Security again, he went to the Grand Ole Opry, for God's sakes, today in Nashville and started talking about how, he said this, Peter, he said this, I couldn't roll tape on it, but he said, my generation has been promised too much in the way of Social Security.
Oh, yeah, and of course, then they passed that budget cut today, you know,
the House did.
Yes, to limit the overwhelming growth of Medicare and feeding kids before they go to school, you know, I weep over that. It's outrageous not a word about cutting back on any of this Halliburton stuff with billions of dollars lost.
Well, I've got another story in the stack, and I'll try to get to it later in the evening. One of the most hateful aspects of these new budgetary constraints, and we heard it last night in the State of the Union, Peter, for heaven's sakes, when he said, my administration has cut non-discretionary, non-security spending every year in my presidency.
Yes.
Yeah, and then I said at the time, you know, what that translates to is we've screwed the poor people a little bit more every year. And this story out of the L.A. Times, there is a new rule that will tighten up benefits for two-parent welfare families. If a kid happens to have a mother and a father, and they're both out of work and they're both on welfare, they get screwed even more than a single-parent household does.
Well, isn't that just wonderful? Any way to put the squeeze on the poor and the people that haven't had the break?
Now, I don't think we can stand too much more of this compassion.
Well, you know, Samuel Alito it's the absolute zenith. It's the triumph of the unconstitution fundamentalist coup. This is going to embolden them. This is going to put them over the top because they have this victory. This is what they've wanted all along. So now, you know, I just don't know what to expect next. Further dilution of the Constitution and focusing on things that are personal matters, people's personal lives. And, you know, God help us, Bob. You know, the whole thing is just so sickening.
It is. Peter, thank you so much. Always so good to hear from you.
You too, man. And I'll send you that link.
Well, we've got it right here. Agnes just found it.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. I didn't hallucinate it. God, I am recovering. Jesus on a Wednesday night. Hallelujah.
say amen and lay your hands upon the radio on the computer speakers.
Amen, Brother Bob.
No, we better stop or we'll be speaking in tongues any minute now, Peter.
Humbly
baga. Hand me that serpent. Later.
Bye.
Take care. Okay, quick break, then we come back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
One down, two to go. I'm Bob. This is Head On. If you've got the burr under your saddle, the bee in your bonnet, deal with it. You know the phone number, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. Email to Bob at headonradio.com. And, apparently Joe Manchin has called for a voluntary halt to mining until we can find out just why it is these non-union mines keep killing their non-union miners. Hint. It's in that operative phrase, non-union. West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin on Wednesday, according to CNN, called for the state's mines to halt operations for safety reviews after two more miners died in accidents earlier today. I'm calling on the industry to cease production activities immediately and go into a mine safety stand down. Well, this is going to be interesting because Joe Manchin's arch enemy is a filthy, filthy mine executive named Don Blankenship. And those two don't get along very well. Two miners died in Boone County, West Virginia mines today. One man who was driving a bulldozer that struck a gas line and incinerated him. And the second death was reported in the early afternoon at the number 18 Long Branch Energy underground coal mine. No further details were available on that one. Just get the union in. Just get the union in. Anything else is window dressing. Get the UMWA into the West Virginia coal fields and end this tragedy. Let's go to Bob in Butler, PA. Hey, Bob, you're Head On.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Hi. You might have got an email from me just a couple minutes ago saying that I was too, how did I put it, clinically, cynically, politically depressed to call tonight. And then you started Manchin. What'd he do? I thought, oh. Then I typed in, oops. Yes, I will. Yeah, that's I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it except that yeah he did, and I thought, oh well, good, okay, good first step. But I don't hold much hope for the unions. I really don't. They're in turmoil themselves, and I wish they'd get their act together. I wish the Democratic Party would get its act together but, oh, good Lord, what a mess we got.
Yeah, from start to finish, there's a hell of a lot of cleanup work to be done, Bob.
Oh, my Lord. Yes, yes, there is. And I just want to say to Mr. Bird, don't take it too hard. You got took.
Yeah.
We all got took. We're all getting took.
Well, it's like our buddy Hubert wrote, I don't know what I did that. He said, we're here in West Virginia, we're suffering from bird flu since about last Thursday.
Yeah, well. But, I mean, that's, he's always done well, I think, by West Virginia.
He has, we've known him for what he is, okay, Bob?
Yeah.
I mean, we know he's as conservative as your average Republican.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, he is what he is, but he has been stepping in it more and more in the last couple of years. The bankruptcy bill, him voting for that, there was no call for it.
I know.
Like I have said a million times before, in a race against Jesus Christ, half of the people in West Virginia would vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half think he is Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So, why does he feel the need to vote we know that 80% of bankruptcies, middle-class bankruptcies in this country, 80% of them are born of medical crises.
Yeah.
And still he voted for that nightmare.
Well, I don't know. The other possibility is that he is like those folks, three or four or five super rich that I spoke about last night in small city, large town that I lived in for a while, who they own the place, and they're messing over everybody. It really is it really is like Dickens time.
Yeah.
In at least in that place, I assume, I guess maybe it's like that in other places too. But the people worship them anyway.
Oh yeah. You know? Oh yeah. We'll come.
Oh, you're not going to give me a job. You're going to give me a penny here, a dollar there, so that I can stay barely alive. Thank you for that.
Yeah, take it easy on the favors, right?
Yeah, just you know, give me a dollar to survive till the next day, please. And then when they do, oh my, you are a god.
You're a savior.
God.
Yeah,
you're our savior, and wouldn't it? And the thought never comes. Well, wouldn't it have been easier just to enact the proper legislation and do the right thing? Well, yeah, but then.
But I keep coming back to it, Bob, over and over again. This impact. Oh, I mean, Bird was full of piss and vinegar this evening or this afternoon. He really was. He said, you know, we're going to punish these coal companies if they don't, toe the safety line.
Well, but is that for real or is that pulpit speak?
One, it happened the day after he voted in favor of Alito, so that told me that told me volumes.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of obvious.
And so he got up and made his little speech in morning business, and Harry Reid was there. Oh, it was a touching little colloquy. Harry Reid stood up and talked about how he would do anything to help Senator Byrd and how his daddy was a coal miner, and we got a coal mine disaster story. On the floor of the Senate.
Well, they keep peeing us off, and then they reel us back in with flowery speech.
Oh, look, you know, what we're going to hear here in West Virginia, after the primary, there is no doubt in my mind that John Racey, who is a dirty, filthy, awful, god awful. I mean, this guy when he announced that he was running for the Republican nomination for Senate, said that he wanted to return America. He wanted to return America to capitalism. Yeah.
Like it already there.
Well, yeah, I mean, like we've been living in the commie workers' paradise all this time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how crazy this dude is. And the Republican National Committee will get behind him, and they will run every filthy ad that they possibly can against Byrd, and they will engender Byrd's supporters to feel like, you know, our dear Senator Byrd is under attack, yada, 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 yada. And you know what? He will be.
Well, let's see how closely the DLC follows the Republicans.
Well, I think that's a valid question.
You know, because you know, I don't know that the Democratic Party hasn't been infiltrated since who knows when, you know, decades ago maybe, by people who were bred, you know, in the think tanks for just this purpose, to change the Democratic Party into something more like the Republican Party, and I.
Well, I mean, they've already got that in Byrd. I mean, he's always been super conservative. For heaven's sakes, was it Richard Nixon that offered him a seat on the Supreme Court?
Yeah, I don't remember. I was too busy trying to destroy my brain with various chemicals at that time.
Well, you know, it happened. That happens.
Yeah. Cool.
But no, seriously, they're going to talk about Byrd's under attack, and a lot of people are going to feel like they've got to get out and fight for him. But the thing is, Senator Byrd was, whether he realized it or not, especially in the last few years, has become a magnet. He's become a rallying point for what passes for the left in this country. People rallied to his cause because he had enough nerve to stand up and say that George Bush was a power mad little warmonger.
Yeah.
And liberals suddenly thought that meant that Robert Byrd was liberal. It doesn't mean that.
No.
And
no.
So I mean, let's see. If I can get Agnes to give me the desktop here so I can see where I put my sound bites, I want to find something here real quick. Bird 2. Here,
yeah.
check this out, Bob.
Yeah,
you're going to love this.
My friend, the leader, our leader on this side of the aisle, who's a coal miner's son, There's not many of us in here who are coal miner's sons. And I'm proud that my leader is a coal miner's son. And I'm proud that he,
this goes on,
I think,
and on, Bob,
assured us,
yeah,
from his standpoint and within his power, that he'll do everything possible, and I hope he will, to help bring this legislation to the floor. He understands that it's needed, and I will welcome his assistance in that regard. I'm proud of him as a coal miner's son. I'm glad that he reminds us of this from time to time. I believe this legislation is badly needed, and so I implore my leader to do everything that he can to see that this bill gets on the calendar and gets taken up by the Senate and acted upon promptly. Mr. Putnam, I thank all senators, and I yield the floor.
Isn't that just pathetic?
Well, wait a minute now. The leader on the other side of the floor.
No, he was thanking Harry Reid, his leader.
Oh, I'm thinking, what is he talking about?
No, because
Chris's father is, you know.
Yeah, no. Harry Reid, after Byrd did his thing first, then Harry Reid stood up and talked about he was the son of a coal miner. Yeah, I'm a son of a coal miner. Okay. But it was this warm, touchy-feely. Honest to God, at one point, Byrd started talking about, I married a coal miner's daughter. And Loretta Lynn, she wrote a song one time called Coal Miner's Daughter, and I married a coal miner's daughter. I'm not kidding, Bob. It was pathetic. It was pitiful. It was heartbreaking.
We get so wrapped up in that. And I'll tell you something Just listen to this. I'm the son of an orthopedic surgeon. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
has nothing to do with it.
Right. Is there a handshake, a lodge sign?
If you're a mason, I'm sure. I'd love to, you know what the heck goes on. And I hate secret societies. Oh, I hate them.
But, I mean, the whole point, honest to God, talking about Loretta Lynn songs,
yeah,
and these two are bantering back and forth about how, they're going to make this legislation happen. I got news for Robert Byrd.
Yeah.
He's got to have the votes of a whole bunch of backstabbing Republicans if he wants to make this happen. And they hate him to begin with, Bob.
And you know what? But I think it was on your program just shortly ago that I heard somebody, I guess you, say that, they'll throw a curveball. They'll say, okay, yeah, let's do the legislation. And then, what's his face, Blankenship or whatever?
We'll sue to have it declared unconstitutional.
Right, through the Supreme Court.
And Alito will agree that it's unconstitutional.
Yes. So, you see, you know, and everybody wants everything nice and simple and clean. Is it yes or is it no? Well, it's not clean and simple. This is some dirty down and dirty dealings that you know, you have to understand from history. Hello.
Well, that's the thing. If this case did, I mean, the coal taxation, the severance taxes in the state, if this thing actually has been appealed upward to the Supreme Court, well, the Coal Association is going to have a real strong chance of their lawyer, who is Robert Byrd's campaign manager, getting the severance taxes overturned as a violation of the Commerce Clause to the United States Constitution. They're going to have a real good shot of getting that done in the Alito Roberts Thomas Scalia Court.
Uh-huh.
And do you have any idea what that is going to mean to the state of West Virginia?
They don't care.
No, I mean, we're talking billions of dollars.
Yeah.
We're talking about not paving roads. We're talking about, we're talking about grinding state government to a halt if they get their way.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I keep hearing, I can't think of what it was now. I just heard again, I'm going back to just a few minutes or half hour or something ago. I heard somebody else saying, but they'll destroy the country. They don't care if they destroy the country.
They want to. Dadgummit.
We're going to be out of here, long gone, before the country disappears into the crevice.
You know that world vision, and you're old enough to remember. You remember the movie Rollerball?
Yeah, I never watched it because I don't like that stuff.
But you know, it envisioned this world where there were no more countries; there were just corporate sectors.
Really?
Yeah.
Now that's exactly what I'm thinking they want.
Go, well, you may not like this stuff, but go and watch this. It's an old movie, James Caan, you know. Mm-hmm. Go and watch this movie just to see the background idea of what the future was, the vision of that, and see if it, you know, the corporations own the rollerball teams, the corporations own segments of society, segments of territory.
Oh, see, I think they want the corporations to totally replace all governments.
Well, that's the vision that's elaborated on in Rollerball. And
yeah.
And again, I'm coming up with this list, Bob.
Yeah.
Of things that I think Republicans have seen and didn't understand what it meant, and they thought it was a model for the future. And Rollerball is on the list now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Starship Troopers, Rollerball, Doctor Strangelove, Catch 22. 1984. They think they're policy manuals.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you see what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, God.
I know. Bob, good talking to you. Have yourself a great evening.
Later.
All right.
Bye.
See ya. Now, and I haven't even gotten to Cindy Sheehan yet. That's the shame. So the Cindy Sheehan issue is the shame of a nation, but I want you to hear something else. Because after the Robert Byrd, Harry Reid love fest, then Charles Grassley took the floor. Charles Grassley, Republican senator from Iowa, Iran-Contra apologist, he's sickening. He's crazy. He's almost as insane as James Sensenbrenner. Really, sit back. Get the popcorn. Crack a beer. Do something. This is what passes for good government from the Republican Party. I mean, this is a long-ass cut, but I'm just going to roll it until I can't stand it anymore. Yes, dear?
Folks, it's going to take more than beer. Go find something hard.
This is what passes for engaging argument on the floor of the United States Senate.
As a starting point, the fact that tomorrow is Groundhog's Day. And I think you see a portrait of...
Okay, pause it.
Punks.
Pause it. Okay. Let me set the scene for you. Charles Grassley is standing in the well of the United States Senate, and he's got his easel behind him. I'm not kidding. You know, this isn't me last night joking about what happened the last time I had a purple finger. This was real. And what you hear Agnes doing now, she was doing about 12 hours ago, too. 10, whatever. Charles Grassley is standing in the well of the Senate, the honest image of a groundhog coming out of its hole and a shadow.
Cartoon version.
Yeah, I mean, like something you'd find, and I'm sure it was. It was blown up from some clip art, okay? And he's the whole idea. This is all talking about the budget reauthorization, and you'll notice he said it's back up. Just hit that button right there.
Yeah, I know what button to hit.
Okay, he's talking, and he says Groundhog's Day. Damn, he can't. It's Groundhog Day. Okay, go, and wait.
As a starting point, the fact that tomorrow is Groundhog's Day. And I think
sure,
you see
betcha.
A portrait of punks. I think the city in Pennsylvania is Punxsutawney. So this is Punxsutawney Phil, the famous groundhog. And tomorrow, you know, is he going to see shadow? If he does, then spring's here. If he doesn't see shadow, then we have six more
weeks of bad government.
Weeks of winter, I guess, is the way the It's been for 100 years, or maybe longer than that.
I'll be here all the way. Don't forget to tip your waitress. Punxsutawney is in Pennsylvania.
And Phil is the name of the groundhog. And in thinking of Phil and his impending weather report, I also thought of a popular film entitled Groundhog Day.
You seen that
movie? It was starring Bill Murray.
Oh, that was
in which a man relives the same day. Groundhog Day, that is. And he lives it over and over and over again.
See, these two guys
this
go into a bar.
This film has taken on greater significance for me as I seem to be in a similar situation. More than just a sense of deja vu.
Oh,
I feel
it,
like
Agnes.
I'm reliving
Honey, please.
A past
please
experience.
It. Did you get all that?
Please make Bob quit playing these clips because it is just pain.
It's what you'll see behind me, dear hey, is dear hey, somebody on my staff told me it was a groundhog. Oh my God, how much are we paying this clown? You know, the several states don't pay their individual. We pay it. You know, tax dollars. You know, it's your money. I mean, can we just send him? Okay, I'm gonna get it right this time. His name is Punk. It's a town in Pennsylvania. Jesus, this is a high-ranking member of the majority party in the United States Senate. Okay. I wish you could make a bumper sticker out of this. Is there anybody in Iowa that wants to run? Is Charles Grassley up for re-election anytime soon? If anybody is interested, I will turn this into a little MP3 and I will email it to the Iowa Democratic Committee. You won't have to run another political ad during the entire freaking campaign cycle. This is your senator. This is your senator on Groundhog Day.
But see, folks, you need to see the clip because the guy.
Well, you really
has
do.
He has the vacant stare, and well, with the groundhog cartoon in behind him.
But remember, dear. Where have you heard Charles Grassley recently? Think.
Rehab? I don't know.
No, seriously. Do you remember the soundbite we had from the Alito hearings where, who was it, Arlen Specter and Charles Grassley were yucking it up about making fun of that goofy black woman, Anita Hill?
Yes, I do. But, you know, it just goes to prove a point here. I mean, evidently they need to up his meds because
this
he's not
no,
working
that's the
right.
Point. This passes for a funny Republican. This passes for funny in Republican world.
Then I'll no longer have comedy in my life because that was sad. Evidently, he's reliving
and
every day.
And it reminds me of a famous movie, dear hey. It was called, it had that groovy hep cat Bill Murray in it. It was called Groundhog Day. Oh, my God. Let's take a break. Can we take a break? But that's one for the ages, don't you think? Yeah, it is. The phone number, of course, you know the phone number. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Speaking of thievery,
yes.
Just wanted to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, I just thought it was so...
oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway. Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. As activist Cindy Sheehan was handcuffed and arrested for wearing a T-shirt at last night's State of the Union address, she wanted to know one simple thing. What did her son, Casey, die for? It's a fair question she has never gotten an answer to from the people who sent him to his death, he and the over 2,000 other American soldiers who lost their lives in Iraq and Afghanistan, not to mention the tens of thousands of innocent Iraqis and Afghanis we've killed. I'm pretty sure Mr. Bush and his followers have an answer for Ms. Sheehan. They won't say it outright, of course. That would be too obvious. But it's pretty clear to this observer that they think Casey died for them so that they could have more money and more power. Casey doesn't matter to them. Neither does his mother or the mothers and families of all the others who died over there. Casey lived and died to serve their interests. That's the answer they would give. But if I can be so bold, I'd like to answer Ms. Sheehan's question, at least how I see it. I think, as Lincoln said at Gettysburg, that Casey's death serves as a reminder of the unfinished work we all have before us, and that it's up to us to be sure that he and others didn't die in vain. Lincoln understood that it was about more than just freedom for Americans, it was about freedom for people all over the world. And if Casey's death spurs us to greater action towards that, then he will have served a purpose far greater than any imperial vision Mr. Bush and his followers can imagine. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
I'm
said it again. Okay, when we get the rubber bricks in, Agnes gets to throw a rubber brick at me every time I say welcome back because we didn't go anywhere. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. And let's shift gears for a minute because in case, there are the weird little Republicans, you know, the people we have to thank for this screwed up nation who voted for George Bush. And, you know, they hang out and they listen and they type with one hand, that kind of thing. But in case there is any doubt left whatsoever that there is not a shred of liberal media left, it never was, for God's sakes. Last night's bloviation on CNN featured a colloquy between, like, Ed Henry and Paula Zahn and Paul Begala and this one and that one and the other one. And they were talking, it had to do with, whether the Democrats are actually anything or just a bunch of gutless, spineless wonders. And this is the front end of it.
Paul, let's talk about some of the challenges the Democrats have to challenge tonight. And one is the perception that they're reactive, not proactive, they have no agenda of their own. And we heard it in a briefing today that basically the only thing they're good at is blasting the president.
Well, and I wish they were better at that. Yeah. I'd be happy if that's all that they did. But
I think they're pretty good.
Well, they're getting better. I think they did a smart thing, though. Ed Henry just said they had a whole week of what they call pre-buttals. And I was talking to them up on the Hill. And they understand they can't beat the president on the night of the State of the Union. They said, we're going to win the State of the Union before he ever gets up on the podium.
Okay. So, I mean, it went on like that. And Paul Begala did what Paul Begala does very well. Who is this guy Kincaid anyways, and why is he talking about me? Phil the Groundhog.
We've just had a report from Punxsutawney Phil.
See, you say Punxsutawney better than Charles Grassley does.
Well, evidently I'm not on the same medications he is, but he evidently is upset that we're talking about him. We're sorry, Phil. We do love you. You're a cute little critter.
All right, but anyway, so this colloquy's going on about the poor, weak, spineless, weenie Democrats. And how the only thing they can do is the only thing they're good at is criticizing the president. But then, out of all of this, you know, Paula Zahn, I guess, because of her 40 minutes. I was on my way to being sexist. I'm not going to do it. Paula Zahn gets the last shot in. Get the popcorn. Sit down. Pour the shot. Now.
Security is still going to be a huge issue in this country, and whether you like it or not, you've got a lot of people out there saying that if you're Republican, we're going to keep America safe. You know, if you vote for a Democrat, basically you want to be bombed.
Oh, Jesus. Oh! Your blood pressure. This is one of those places where... Well, it's a classic tactic used by the wingnuts. You know, there are a lot of people out there who say. A lot of people are saying. Lots of people say. And they never cite, not once, never know how, no where, no way. They will not cite who those people are. I want to know, by God, as if I didn't know it was Bush and Cheney. I want a citation from Paula Zahn. I want her to say, we sent a reporter out into the field, and out in the field, we found this raving idiot who said that if you vote for Democrats, you want to get bombed. Play it again, Agnes.
Security is still going to be a huge issue in this country, and whether you like it or not, you've got a lot of people out there saying that if you're Republican, we're going to keep America safe. You know, if you vote for a Democrat, basically you want to be bombed.
Make it stop. Make the hurting go away. There are just so many things to parse in that little teensy tiny itsy bitsy soundbite. Whether you like it or not. The hell does that mean, Paula? Whether you like it or not, there are still a lot of people out there who say that the Republicans are going to keep you safe. Who are they? Get them on there. Give them a microphone. Put a camera on them. I mean, we're talking about Doug and Bob or the Great White North. You know, take off your hose head. The Republicans are going to keep you safe. No.
They don't like us.
You know, Doug and Bob McKenzie, the Great White North.
They still don't like us.
No, I know, but I mean, who... I mean, is this some addled dude walking around trying to get the screw top off of the wild Irish rose?
Did you see Paul Begala's face when she said that, though?
Oh, it was like he lost all muscle control and his face was just going to slide off the bones or something, sure.
Pretty much. I mean, look at her. She's supposed to be well-educated.
No, she's not.
Oh, come on, Bob.
No, they didn't hire her for well-educated.
Then I don't know what they hired her for.
Oh.
But, who is it that is keeping us safe? Let's see. I see.
Yeah, I know. Agnes, you may not like it, but there are a lot of people out there who say that if you vote for Republicans, Republicans will keep us safe. And if you vote for a Democrat, you just want to get bombed.
Well, that's funny. I haven't been bombed under a Democrat, but I've sure seen planes
I watched that State of the Union address last night, and trust me, honey, I wanted to go out and get bombed. But not
now,
like
Agent
that.
Fred, he doesn't mean bombed in that you're going to nuke him, okay? And he can't do that anyway. His blood pressure, nah.
Killjoy.
Yeah.
But really, a lot of people say?
No.
I mean, is this the part where they go to that fellow that looks like Niles Crane to talk about the latest Harris poll, where a lot of people say that if you vote for a Republican, they're going to keep you safe, but if you vote for a Democrat, you want to get bombed? The people of New York City, the people of New York State, voted overwhelmingly against George Bush. They had been through 9/11. They certainly didn't want to get bombed again. Or planed. Or whatever. I mean, is it just me? Am I just oversensitive to this kind of horse crap? How much money does this woman make? How much money does Charles Grassley make? And yeah, I've found that, yeah, he's not up for re-election until 2010. It's okay. I will still cut the soundbite. Somebody put me in touch with the Iowa Democratic Committee chairman, please. I want this in the vaults waiting for Charles Grassley. And, you know, but of course, we're not surprised by Paula Zahn at CNN. For God's sake, CNN hired, and we talked about it, that cretin, that goofball, that... Oh, Glenn Beck. They hired Bingo Billy Bennett, you know, Abort All the Black Babies Bennett. They routinely have Ann Coulter on. So, you know, no, I'm not surprised. But I am disgusted. And I really, I want some reality television. Because I desperately wanted Paul Begala to reach across and smack that stupid little blonde so hard that the spit flew out of her mouth. And I'm not Agnes, I am not talking about domestic violence. First of all, as far as we know, there's nothing domestic about it. This is newsroom violence I'm advocating here. Just once, just whack.
Oh, no, that's the one where Will Ferrell played.
You know... Hit her again. I can put a little stank on it.
Bob, you're on thin ice.
No, I mean, how much are we supposed to put up with? A lot of people out there say that if you vote for a Democrat, you're going to get, you want to get bombed?
Well, I tell you what. When the Dems win, I think they should replace Paula Zahn with someone far younger and far cuter and have some implants.
No, I want...
She's getting old.
No, cute doesn't matter. I want cute, I watch a beauty pageant. I want who I want in Paula Zahn's chair? Old and rickety and cranky as she may be, I want Helen Thomas in Paula Zahn's chair. Because she's got credibility. You can believe the things that Helen Thomas says. You know, she's like Candy Crowley, only not insane. Bless her heart. Oh, what did Ann Coulter call her? That hateful old Arab? I would give you 10 million Paula Zahns for one Helen Thomas. Is there anybody, really, I mean, I keep seeing the ads, because I guess it's out on video now, for Good Night and Good Luck, which is supposed, based on the nominations, it's gotten an excellent, excellent film. And the other night during the Young Turks filibuster palooza-thon, I kept thinking back to the journalistic heritage that was put in motion by people like Edward R. Murrow. Is there anywhere in America today, anywhere, anyone sufficient to fill the shoes of an Edward R. Murrow or a Walter Cronkite or a David Brinkley or a Chet Huntley? Frank Reynolds? Anywhere? I suspect there isn't. Way, 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 way back when dinosaurs roamed the earth and I was young, Charles Kuralt came to the local university where I lived, and he was brought there, if I recall correctly, he was brought there by the journalism school. And he gave a lecture. And he said, do you want to be a journalist? Do you want to follow in the footsteps of people like Edward R. Murrow? If you do, you need to major in art. Art history. Major in philosophy. Major in English. Major in some arcane dialect of Cantonese. Major in political science. Major in economy. Economics. Major in biology. And he just kept listing, you know, it was like he was reading the catalog of the university, and he goes, for God's sakes, don't major in journalism. There's no such thing as journalism. Journalism is where you get your fingers dirty setting the print. You know, Ben Franklin, what did they call it? He was a printer's apprentice. What did they call it? A printer's devil. And you start out and you write obituaries. Really? Or you hang out at the police station watching what goes on the blotter. And you harangue beat cops. And you write your little story and you hand it to some grizzled old editor of 45 years who smokes 4 packs of cigarettes a day, who, you know, just takes his blue pencil and scrawls all over it and says, kid, you're an absolute failure. Why don't you go back to work in the grocery store? But you don't. You go back to your desk and you write it again and you hand it back in and you get more blue pencil and it comes. That is how journalism happens. And on the side, you're interested in God knows what. Maybe you like to go to the movies. Or maybe you're into racing or art. Who knows? But you have a life outside of the newsroom, and it's that life outside of the newsroom that informs what goes on when you're there, when you're on the beat. And you move up from the obituaries to the police beat to whatever. And you find your, and they're calling you a reporter. You do not, however, become something approaching a journalist by starting out as a weather girl. And that's where we, you know, it is said that CBS is courting Katie Couric to take over for Bob Schieffer. Hosting, not reporting, hosting, trust me, the CBS Evening News. Katie Couric, who sat there and told abject lies about the Democratic Party and the Abramoff scandal. Jeez. Edward R. Murrow has worn the insides of his coffin smooth from all the spinning he's done. Let's go to the phones. Luke is with us calling from Tennessee. Hey, Luke, you're head on.
Hi, Bob. You're on my favorite subject is the media, I tell you. Well, one thing before we get started.
Yeah.
You will like Good Night and Good Luck. I saw it. It is very good.
I really am looking forward to seeing it.
In almost no way, it starts to feel almost like a documentary at times, but it's good.
And, well, David Strathairn is such an excellent actor.
I mean, so underappreciated. But on the media, it's a shameful part when we're sitting here now, and probably the best commentator we've got on media right now is Jon Stewart.
Yeah, a comedian.
Either him or Olbermann.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, that's the only two people I try to watch on a nightly basis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they don't. Well, besides them, who's got any credibility?
I know. Oh, go to Crooks and Liars.
Okay.
And there's a thing with Olbermann going after O'Reilly. It's a long thing, about 3 minutes. It is hilarious. You'll roll on the floor.
Oh, I've seen several of those. Is this a new one?
This is one, I think, from like the night before last. And I mean, he just essentially, apparently O'Reilly jumped on them the other night, and so he just kind of turns it all around on them. And, he does it like he's he answers. What he does is he gives O'Reilly's answers, then he interprets what the real answer, answer he was giving was.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's like I love Crooks and Liars, Luke.
Oh, the nice thing about them is we can't watch everything. I wish we could. You're
right.
Sometimes, just to catch some of this stuff.
But I caught Jon Stewart's take on Oprah World versus Real World.
That was perfect. It's like, gee, why don't we get Oprah? Maybe she could do the news. I think it'd be better.
Yeah, in Oprah World, you get to call somebody a liar when he's a liar.
I mean, they're so scared to do it. That's the thing. It's like, guys, that's what you're there for. You're supposed to be catching people like this and saying, hey, people, this guy's lying to you.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's what they're there for.
Well, look at Edward R. Murrow. Look at the McCarthyism. Look at what he did to put a stop to that.
Well, as I say, the only one I'm looking forward to right now, probably for the next couple of weeks, is I think Mars about to come back on with Real Time.
Well, that'll be good.
And because he's been off for like the last 3 months, so he's got it all saved up.
Yeah, but Luke, the bad side of Bill Maher coming back means that he will have his dear friend,
I know,
Ann Coulter, back on the program.
I know, but you know, it's like say it's sort of the punishment you have to take to get it.
Right, it's the price you got to pay.
I know, but you were talking about Helen Thomas. I'd love to have like Helen Thomas and Molly Ivins.
Oh, wouldn't you though?
Now that would be a fun get some one of these right wing Republicans between the two of them and let them just chew him up.
And well, you know, you mentioned Molly Ivins, not Molly, but Keith Olbermann. I read somewhere that the suits at MSNBC stay on him because they think that he has
too many
liberal guests. Yeah,
I saw something the other day. It was off the Buzzsplash. And it was a commentary, I think it was from somewhere, I think it was Philadelphia. And the guy was talking about it, and he said, look at MSNBC. They've got one liberal, who's Keith Olbermann, and he's the highest-rated show on their air. These are people who've had, they've had Michael Savage, they've had Alan Keyes. I think Alan Keyes had a 0.0 rating. but like I say, any neocon, any right-wing nut can get on their air. But they will not give a liberal a chance.
Well, see, that's the thing. I keep thinking, Luke, that if only I would come on the show every now and then and scream about how Hillary killed Vince Foster, I'd probably get an offer. I don't know.
Oh, well, you know, it's one of those things you saw the other night where they were going to have Randy on Larry King.
Yeah, that ended.
And that's, you know, I mean, it's like, and I mean, I understand the story they put on, you know, with Mr. Woodruff and the cameraman. I mean, I understand that's
sure.
Actually is news. But most of the times, Larry King has got to the point, move him over to headline news. You know, because I'll be honest, on news, maybe one night about every 10, he'll do a news story.
Well, move him over to the headline news for you know, old retired hacks.
Well, that's what I mean. Just put him over to the entertainment news. That's where he needs to be.
Yeah, or, you know, put him and Nancy Grace on together.
Oh, God.
They'd love each other.
Oh, it's what I'm just hoping that he goes ahead and retire. We'll get Costas. Now, Costas has actually been really good when I've seen him do it.
Yeah, he is. Well, until somebody gets to him.
I know, but that's about the best we can hope for in that respect.
Yeah.
I mean, those have to get him to where we can get him and go from there.
I keep wondering if they're trying to groom Maher for taking over for Larry. I can't imagine it though. You know, taking away Bill Maher's dirty words.
That's what I was gonna say. He's set for cable. You know what I mean? He's one of them type of people. I'd be wondering someday if he wouldn't do it Howard Stern. and go like to XM or Sirius.
Yeah, but I think my guess, Luke, is that...
But he don't want to do it day to day.
Well, and it's not just that. To do the kind of quality that Bill Maher does... Mm-hmm. Is an awfully, awfully hard job, and to do it at the level he does it, you almost can't do it on a day in and day out basis.
I tell you the one thing I miss though, really, in Bill Maher's thing since he's moved on, is I miss Louis Black.
Oh gosh, yes.
Oh God, I mean, he would come on there sometimes, and it's like you were just waiting for him just to seize up and fall to the ground.
Oh yeah, well, you know, when that hand comes out and starts shaking. You know, it's like it's going to come through the TV and find the nearest Republican and just grab him by the throat. You know, I love that.
He's sort of like one of those street preachers. You know, it just looks like he's just waiting for him to come. Somebody get in range,
well,
grab him. I'm going to make you believe.
Yeah, in many ways, Luke, I think he is the sort of the heir apparent or the best thing we've got since we lost Bill Hicks and doggone it, Sam Kennison.
Well, I tell you who we don't get to see on the air. I think is very good. And does feel political and humor is Will Durst.
Oh, he's brilliant.
I mean, you know, like I say, he had the drinking game this last time, and it was like if you follow that thing, boy, we'd still be waiting to wake up.
Yeah, oh. I saw that last night, and it was we should try that on the air sometime.
It's like I say though, you'd have to say goodbye from everybody or your family for about 3 days. Like,
yeah,
you know.
No, yeah,
see me next Saturday.
Yeah, just wandering around behind the little animals after that was over.
Lock the door on the inside and on the outside. Come on.
But honest to God, I mean, what if CBS gives the evening news to Katie Couric?
Well, it's like I say, most of them nowadays, they're news readers.
Right.
That's all they are. I mean, you could just as easily have Max Headroom up there doing the same thing.
Well, sure.
I mean, that's all it is. I mean, I'm just waiting for the day they get it to that point where it'll be digital. Those people are gone. Because that's all they're going to have is just a head up there talking.
Well, you know, Dan Rather was he wasn't just the anchor of the evening news. He was the managing editor of CBS News. I mean,
him and Brokaw and Jennings, all three were that. I mean, they came from real reporting.
Right. Can you imagine Katie Couric wearing the mantle of managing editor of CBS News?
Well, the problem is, if you don't have her, there's probably a lot worse that they're going to put in there.
I know.
That's the thing you really don't want to think of. I mean, it's really scary past the point.
You know, I mean, if they're going to hire Katie Couric, they may as well just go ahead and hire Paris Hilton for the White House press corps.
Oh gosh. Oh, I tell you, the one other night, every time I see, Peanut Brain, talking. And I hear you talk about Iraq. The first question I want to ask is, where are Barbara and Jenna serving? You know, until you tell me where they're serving in Iraq, no more kids go over.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, because I saw somebody talking about them, and I said, yeah, it looks like they've trained under, the two of them might have seen them, looks like they trained under Paris Hilton.
Well, last night's State of the Union, Luke, was nothing but a slap in the face at no one as much as the Iraqi people, because we had polling data out on the same day as the State of the Union that said half of the Iraqi people think it's okay to blow up American soldiers, and more than half want a daggum timetable.
It's one of those things, it's like, say, you just have to, like, say, link together anymore what you watch. It's like on MSNBC, I call it Fox retreads.
Yeah,
it's one of those things. I say, except for I tell you, one person who everybody else, I wish all the liberal stations would have on here and there. And the person, I don't know if he just doesn't do anything anymore, if he's doing other stuff behind the scenes. I wish people would start having Donahue on.
Yeah, I think
he's the one person I think he's got credibility. You know.
Well, you know, they had him there at MSNBC. He was making ratings, but he was too liberal and gone.
But that's what I mean. He's the one person, I mean, beyond anybody else who's more mainstream, that could get on. But
well, the other thing I want to see is on Scarborough Country some night, Luke. I want to see some guest on there who you remember when Saturday Night Live, he did the pathological liar. I want to see some guest on there who will just be cruising along talking to Joe Scarborough and every now and then Lori Klaisutis.
Well, it's one of those. Have you seen this new thing Matthews has now? He calls Hot Shots.
Yeah, everybody but Olbermann.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like, yeah, here's a whole lot of stuff. It's like tonight I was watching Dobbs, just see what, you know, just get the flavor of what's going on. And it's like, well, let's see, here we have Ed Rollins and Gergen and John Vaughn. I'm like sitting there going, yeah, boy, this is really balanced.
Yeah, well, yeah, I can't even look at John Fund anymore, Luke.
Oh,
You know, it, I don't know if you've ever seen it in on Bart Cop's pages, but John, you know, John Fund is a woman beater.
Well, I was going to say, him and O'Reilly, he should be on O'Reilly every night. The two of them should just get along perfect.
Yeah, but then the falafel might come out, and we just don't want to see that, Luke. Good talking to you. Hey, listen, we got to roll on, but I hope we'll hear from you again real soon.
All righty, take her easy.
Take care.
Bye.
You know, I wish we had some sort of present for first-time callers or something, but, yeah. We're working on it. Let's take a quick break. I got to get some ice for the root beer. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Hey, welcome back. Got my ice. Got my root beer. And I think we're ready to do about, 45, 50 more minutes of conversation radio. Sound good to you? Let's do it then. Let's see. Bonnie, first-time caller from Vermont. Hey, Bonnie, you're Head On.
Well, hi, Bob. How are you?
Doing great.
Excellent. Excellent. I hope you forgive me for my Pollyanna-esque email to you earlier.
Oh, there was nothing Pollyanna about it.
I'm holding out hope for Democrats, Bob.
Well, yeah,
that's just about a cardinal sin.
Well, we gotta hope for somebody, but there's gotta be a little bit. Doesn't there have to be a little bit of a winnowing of the wheat from the chaff?
Well, I think 42 of them stood up, and the four that didn't felt they couldn't. I think they felt boxed in. I would have been hard put 2 days ago to make a case for the Democrats because I'm boiling. And then we come to this glorious State of the Union address. Cast your cares aside, join hands, and act.
Yeah, and it's all just because we're all just moving into a glorious future.
Well, I'll tell you,
with no animal hybrids.
We got to put our donkeys and elephants aside and salute this flag, or it's going to be a different color with plaid instead of stripes, and there won't be any stars. It'll just be the number one. And I don't like that.
I don't like that at all. And then the whole the Cindy Sheehan thing that went down during the process.
Absolutely revolting.
And of course, what was his Congressman Young's wife was also asked to leave.
That I hadn't heard.
Oh, really? Well, no. Cindy Sheehan, she unzipped her hoodie, and all her T-shirt just had the number of people dead on it, and just said, how many more?
Yes, her offense I was aware of.
Right. They dragged her out. T-shirt. Yeah, they dragged her out. They put her in handcuffs. They held her. They roughed her. They cuffed her. She said she had bruises and strained muscles out of it. Now, the congressman's wife, who was sitting about two or three seats down from Laura Bush, she had a T-shirt on that said, support the troops. And they came and tapped her gently on the shoulder and said, would you come with us, please? She didn't get arrested. She didn't get handcuffed. She didn't get diddly. It becomes kind of obvious, doesn't it, Bonnie?
It's a juggernaut. It's a front. You know, it's a giant chessboard. I was relaying to you when I used to ride down to Wall Street on a subway with a major Wall Streeter, and he'd just talk about us going into the cattle car, and that's what we were, he soon rose above that station. But I think that's just the attitude of a lot of these people. I shared with you, I didn't know if I got into it. I think there's a total disconnect here. Where is affect? Where are their feelings? Where are their emotions? It's like the Stepford Party.
Yeah, well, I mean, among other people, this corporate raider, bottom feeder, Hubert Ross Jr.
Who?
I don't know if you heard it earlier. We've got two more dead miners here in West Virginia today.
Oh.
And so, but you know, these guys, they don't care.
No, they don't. They will momentarily when they reel from the public's pain and anger. They'll have a momentary flash, but the whole setup is so sociopathic.
Yes.
You know? It's self-involved, it's greed, it's money. The scab is coming off, and we're looking at the ooze, and it's really ugly.
Yes, it is.
Not a pretty picture. So my thing was, which I just touched on briefly with you, and I haven't really formulated yet, was this concept of an economic boycott, deal with banks, who do not invest as we do not like. Take our pensions, 401ks, those of us fortunate enough to have one, our future savings, yank them. In other words...
Is there a list somewhere?
We're going to have to formulate this, aren't we? This means working across interest groups. There might be a few special interests that will fall by the side because we have to keep to a core message. We've got to increase minimum wage. We all need health insurance, access to a fair and living wage. There are certain common issues that unite more of us than divide us. And that's what we need to focus on.
Let me ask you this. I'm pretty rough on the religion industry, Bonnie. is it possible? I mean, you talk about these core issues. Can you reach them, or do we forge this alliance without?
I was born a Christian.
Okay.
I do not belong to an organized Christian church because somewhere around between 7 and 9 years of age, I became aware of the quality hypocrisy. If you don't do what you do, and I saw adults lying behaviorally, they'd go to church, profess great faith, I liked the music, I liked to hang out. This was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a little older and the scales start falling off. And I still remember singing those songs. I knew this person lied, and I knew that person beat their wife, and I knew this child had stolen. And I was going, this is organized religion? And I think I've always, I was behaviorally taught how to behave, and I think that was so much a part of my being that I couldn't be bound by an organized space.
Well, but so many people are.
And those that are, they're truly hypocrites. And this is why we need to start reaching beyond terms of left and liberal and start talking in terms of humanity, because it's not a quality of the left or right. It's the quality of a human being. They've linguistically managed to carve us out. I mean, you can read Chomsky, Lakoff. I haven't read them deeply. But people have probed the issue of language for now close to 100 years.
Yeah.
And there are simple ways to communicate. I had touched with you that people who learn from words have a richer language. It's a deeper breadth of experience. There are more complex ways you can express language than you can picture, except when you're dealing with an aesthetic. But if you're dealing with learning tools and your only learning tools are visual, like TV, like video games,
mm-hmm.
your experiences don't involve as much human interaction or scenes about human action like a written discourse can do.
Well, you know, you raise a good point, Bonnie, because, you know, you talk about learning visually versus, you know, reading, so forth. The old saying that a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Yeah.
That may be the case, but I don't know that necessarily means the picture is better. What does it say for the brain that has processed 1,000 words as opposed to the one image?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you're onto something with that.
Yes, and another thing is our sense of community. When you heard the Alito nomination being debated, the right was always talking about abstractions like honor, justice, nation, all these grandiose that you salute, and they're just off in the air. They're not concrete. Democrats consistently talk about family, community. They're the people party.
Right.
To me, an oxymoron is a poor Republican.
Exactly.
Why? How can you think that the party that is trying to justify torture, the child party that is going to unfund No Child Left Behind and turn it into a burden upon the state, that in every core of every program is greed and avarice, not communal benefit, and that the Democratic Party and the populist element within the Democratic Party, that is the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party that cares about the individual, the family, the community, that extends the sense of community from the individual all the way to the nation and every step in between.
Okay, but for those people, and again, this kind of goes back to my question, do we write them off? Are they simply unreachable?
No.
For those people who think it's more vital to our national interest to stop two guys from picking out a China pattern than it is to making sure that every child has three squares a day, how do you get through to them?
Very, very simple concept. You build a construct. First of all, the true party of safety, because they start fewer wars, are Democrats. And if you want to talk about safety and security and a diminution of terrorist elements, you start talking about the safety within the family, how the family as a unit is safety, how a stable society is safe, how a non-aggressive foreign policy is safer. You bring home, you reassure those that have been troubled by the fears that have been cast abroad in popular media by the polarizations of media.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a mighty, mighty steep mountain to climb.
We just use simple language, simple concepts, simple goals. We're dealing with a dumbed-down populace that is used to getting pablum, and they're getting fed up with it.
Well, is this the part where they start calling us elitists?
Oh, no, we're through that. They're the real elitists. Just look at Orrin Hatch and just view him as an archetypical conservative Republican, right down to that overly tight little shirt. And have you ever gone onto Orrin Hatch's site and heard him sing?
Yes.
About the eagle soaring.
Is oh, no, no, that's Ashcroft. That's Ashcroft.
Oh, okay. He's got his own bird.
Yeah.
I think I know where it's lodged, but it's absolutely astonishing. It is so rigid. And their forms, it is a total linear brain function. They do not understand the more empathetic, intuitive, less linguistically linear. That's their property. The right has logic and might make right and fear and greed. They're very primal, very hindbrain. The left is slightly more elevated, but they're really stuck in the emotive center.
Well, and we have, you know, you mentioned Noam Chomsky and George Lakoff. We have permitted ourselves to our great, we have permitted ourselves to be ghettoized, Bonnie. I've mentioned that on a number of occasions. We talk about, and I mean no insult to any particular group or any particular activist for any group, but we have permitted ourselves to talk about women's rights, and we've talked about racial rights, and we've talked about workers' rights, and we've talked, you know, and all these little teeny tiny subgroups. I don't think we go anywhere until we get to the point where we're talking about human rights.
That's it. That's exactly it. And any part of that, any aspect, you know, I had mentioned that to you in an email, how Lakoff refers to EES. That's just one aspect of human rights. What about the child in the neighborhood that doesn't have access to an equal education because of social, you know, yada-da-da-da, and you just turn it right back off and you always stay on message. That is just one aspect of human rights. Somebody raises abortion, an aspect of human rights. There's great disagreement in it across the political spectrum from left to right. That's the most contentious issue, as is the death penalty. A lot of people view right to life from beginning to end, conception through death. So we just bring right to life back to the death penalty.
Well,
yes.
Yeah.
And most people, even the most rabid pro-choice person, would do anything to prevent an abortion. And it's just part of human rights.
Well, and again, it does so much of this. You've opened this whole issue, Bonnie. We have been framed.
Yes, we have, but we've allowed it to happen.
Exactly, it is as much our fault as it is theirs.
And we have to learn to apply the same linguistic judo. And if we need maybe a dozen jingoistic phrases to just keep conversations on track, because our responses are going to be more emotive. We do care. We care passionately. And I think that our type of patriotism is what generally carries this country through very, very difficult times.
And I've argued that, you know, it's the Paula Zahn thing. It's, you know, the Republicans will give us more security.
They pettify and trivialize whatever they come across. They try to minimize the impact of anything with broad human appeal. It's like keeping people from turning out at the polls, not having enough voting machines in black neighborhoods, making the disenfranchised wait hours in line. Your state. You know, a poor state. You know what you did.
Yeah, exactly.
If you didn't have Mr. Bird, the redoubtable Mr. Bird, what the heck would West Virginia have?
I've got a pretty good idea, and I don't even want to go there.
Yeah.
So, you know, over and over again, calling and telling people, well, you know, Democrats vote on Wednesday, on Wednesday, Republicans vote on Tuesday. That was done. That has been done. The multiple precinct thing. It goes on and on and on. And
because they don't have safety in numbers, we have safety in numbers. And if we gently learn to net together an alliance of a community of common interest, if I'm talking about the core issues, and if they have to be two, be they raising the minimum wage and universal health care, that has broad appeal. And that's what we're looking for. That's what we have. We already possess what we need to form a coherent movement. We just have to simplify the message and get it targeted.
Who do we talk to do it?
Well,
I mean, we're doing it right now.
Yes, we're doing it. There's a way. Let me go off on a sidetrack, and
sure.
Then I'll tell you a couple thoughts. And if any of your listeners happen to pick up on this. Because Howard Dean's wife Judy Steinberg is my doctor and has been for over a dozen years.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah. I've actually been, I own a health food store, and I've been to a trade conference in D.C. where James Gordon, M.D., gave me a signed autograph book to give to the good doctor about integrating mind-body care. I've tried to talk to people at the state level about it. They just, oh, we've got to get structures in place. But funny.
Don't you love that?
Oh, I just went. I went up to the guy who drafted legislation, and I just said, piffle on this. We've got to work on a national level.
Yeah.
If the Democrats had a national wellness initiative, we would ease the cost of chronic care, lower infant mortality, adult mortality. We'd live longer, healthier lives, not just be as dependent on pharma. This is what people don't want other people to know, that maintaining good health is attainable for just about anyone.
Well, you know, I followed Dennis Kucinich, and he made a very, very strong point a couple of years ago, and that was that the money we spend on health care in America is sufficient to fund universal health care.
Yeah.
We just don't get it because we're spending it the wrong way.
Oh, absolutely. It you know, when we start talking about things like single-payer system or even...
That's when eyeballs start rolling back.
Right. And, oh, socialism, creeping socialism, the commies are in the bushes. Eek.
Yeah, the commies going to get your medicine.
Oh, yes. And it works just about every other civilized country in the world, some way, shape, or form of centrally administered medicine. But pharma's in the way, the AMA's in the way.
Well, why has the Democratic Party, Bonnie, you talk about simple concepts, why has the Democratic Party never picked up on the notion that we have a higher infant mortality rate than Cuba?
If you had $1 billion, wouldn't you fund both parties? And if you needed a little movement one way, you might give a little more money here.
Yeah, a little nudge here, a little
mm-hmm.
nudge there.
So you always hedge your bets. And most of the times the Democratic Party is merely used as the kinder, gentler face of the Republican Party. Clinton is a perfect example.
Yeah, a lever.
Yes, yes. To ease public discontent until they can get a strong Republican tripartite government in place. And then they can do what they really want to do, which is rape this country. And that's what they're doing.
Oh, well, and with real expertise.
You know, China's become the fourth biggest holder of U.S. debt behind Japan, Britain, and, you know,
yeah.
And India's getting right up there. So we're the Souths were number three, I believe. One, two, or three.
I got a story here, Bonnie. Iran says it will resist bully nations. Iran's president lashed out Wednesday at the United States and vowed to resist, blah, 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 blah. And I read that headline, and I immediately thought of, you know, the president of Iran standing in Tehran saying, "This is great," and Bush standing in Washington, "Less feeling."
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it. It's like two kids facing off in a street fight. It's just ridiculous. Did you catch the little CNN blip where CNN was kicked out of Iran momentarily?
Yeah, I did.
For the mistranslation. And did you hear his statement that a civilized nation does not need nuclear weapons? Loud and clear, that's what he said.
Yeah, I did. But
nobody wanted to report that.
Oh, no, that wasn't near...
Pick up on that. No.
No, I mean, you know, there's a missing white girl in an island somewhere.
Right. It's so much better to keep the munitions factories pumping, to withdraw troops from Iraq and keep them in a hold pattern somewhere in the Near East.
I keep wondering, when Eisenhower gave his military-industrial complex speech on the eve of his departure of the White House, and he made that statement, every dollar we spend on bombs is a dollar we don't spend on roads. Every dollar we spend on missiles is a dollar that we don't spend on feeding the hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Did the Republican Party just say, get the crazy old man out of here?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was he on, had it not
but
been
don't,
for the...
Don't you remember how much time he spent playing golf? Don't you think
oh, yeah.
he was put there to keep him basically out of the corridors of power and contained? Ike was micromanaged from the moment he walked on that stage.
And he just got off the plantation for a
he
little bit.
He got off the plantation and got to deliver that line. Got to deliver those lines.
Well, I tell you what, I like your enthusiasm. I like your optimism. I've been extremely bleak.
I was too. Let me tell you, the only reason I'm home and the only reason I started listening to radio is because my blood pressure has been steadily rising since November. I have physically, within my body, suppressed a burning rage response. And finally, my head's cutting in. And I'm seeing that the only real release for the frustration, because it's not just that, it's like, what the hell do we do, is that we must formulate a plan of action that is clear, coherent, and we must really understand the basis for that.
I have to ask you, Bonnie, you're in Vermont, and you're like, as far as the rest of the country is concerned, we kind of look to you, look at all those sane people. Is it just, I mean, you walk down the street and there are other normal Bonnie people going, you know, we got to fix this, we got to, and, you know, could you just muster up like this big sort of Vermont wave and just let it sort of sweep down through the United States?
Well, we do have Bernie, Jim, and Pat. You know, we're really blessed in our representation in this state. We're not led by a ship of fools, except temporarily by our governor.
Is Bernie's campaign for Jim Jeffords' seat in pretty good shape?
Oh, excellent shape. Excellent good. Shape. The competitors are already floundering.
Good. And I mean, why is it that the garbage that grabs people in the rest of the country doesn't stick to you people? And I don't mean you people. Yeah, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say it that way. But it doesn't. I mean, you throw the gay marriage thing up, and Vermont goes, you know.
Right. Well, you forget that Texas likes to call itself a republic, but Vermont was actually a republic before it was a state. In this state, before you vote, you take a Freeman's oath that, regardless of what you may call your political tag, to the best of your ability, you're going to vote your conscience.
No kidding.
No, I don't think a lot of Vermonters really live up to that, but it's right there in the state constitution. Yep.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. It's a good way.
You know,
and I think another way that we might think to contain society is just not imitate some other behavior, but ingrained in our sides, this whole idea of civilian review. Like, if we are to be true patriots, we need a participatory democracy where all of our voices are heard.
Now, do you guys do the town meeting thing?
Yes, we do. It's alive and well.
And real politicians have to stand there and take tough questions. They can't and run.
Right. Right.
Can't imagine it.
It's just amazing. And but I think there's really thousands of us, Bob, across this country.
Well, absolutely there are.
Thousands of us. That are going to act. We're going to call the people. We're going to call folks that advertise on media and say, I'm not going to buy your product if you don't get that right talking trash off the tube. I've listened to it long enough.
Well, that's what they've been doing to us for years.
Right. So we've got to follow the game plan. It's expected of us. And if we really voted with our dollars, if we stop shopping the Walmart, we start buying it within our local economies, if we support our local banks, support micro businesses, don't go macro, watch the car you buy, you know, just if we take the economic underpinnings out of these guys and we just start spreading the word, that's where it's going to hit them. It's in the pocketbook. Ooh, they are a force to be reckoned with.
Well, I hope we will continue to hear from you in the future, Bonnie.
Okay.
And I hope you can turn your efforts toward if there's a credit card company whenever the possibility arises, we've got pretty slim pickings around here.
We ought to have and circulate. We should all contribute to a pool, whatever post you recommend, or if your site wants to serve as a post, the greenest products, the greenest people, best prices that we can find.
Yeah.
And how does self-help as regards health insurance, house insurance, you know, any kind of that information. And maybe one of us can tab it, you know, do some kind of database.
That would be wonderful. You know, we try to buy Citgo gasoline whenever we can.
Yes, yes. And that's another thing. If we had like a no gas Thursday, once a week, nobody bought gas. And then if we did buy from Citgo, because it's owned by Venezuela, not in America, not ExxonMobil, who won't pay the Valdez fine with record.
I saw that profit the other day.
Mm-hmm. So
we're still fighting over that.
Oh, yes. And another thing I wanted to bring up in the station, and I'll let you go. You got to do your number. But there's an international impetus called Codex Alimentarius at the World Health Organization.
Okay, slow down and do that again, Bonnie.
Codex Alimentarius. It's a World Health Organization initiative, and as we now know, the World Health Organization, through the World Trade Organization, has an enforcement arm. They are out to harmonize the global food supply. If you've ever heard or seen the film, The Future of Food, their premises is that within, probably by about 2020, there will be six major food companies on the earth. Monsanto is already regulating with genetically modified seeds.
Absolutely. That was one of the things that occurred to me when I heard Dear Leader mention no more animal-human hybrids. He was oblivious to the Frankenfoods that Monsanto has already created.
But they now they're trying to mandate this internationally. By
they've done it in Iraq.
They have, and they're regulating your access to vitamins right now in Germany. Codex is implemented there. I gather there's a limit on how many milligrams your vitamin C can have. Your vitamin E. My husband was saying it's limited to 10 milligrams, on and on. You have to have a prescription for things that health food people know they're harmless, like alpha-lipoic acid.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't have access to the supplements and nutrients, because the outgoing, you talked about Eisenhower, well, the outgoing head, another outgoing head, the one of the FDA, I believe it was in 1970-71, said that the average American was not consuming enough of the RDA, of recommended minerals, known at that point because American soils were so depleted. So we need supplementation. Now, if you go to the FDA site, it is recommended that you do take a multivitamin a day because our soils, if we're not eating organic food and watching every bite that goes in our mouth, our soils are so depleted, we need supplementation to maintain average health.
Oh, and you mentioned, and we like to share information on this program. You mentioned you run a health food.
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah,
you got a website?
I kind of backed into it. Oh, sure. It's www.appletreenaturalfoods.com. It's not an active website. You can email me through it, but I hope to have one eventually.
Okay, well, great. I mean, if business gets good enough. I hope everyone listening will contribute to your success.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Bob, and boy, may you guys live long and prosper, because this is a real public service.
Well, we're trying, and we have this. I've never felt so good about doing something in my entire life, and I've done a bunch of stuff, Bonnie. This is what is good.
Yeah.
I've never worked harder at something, and I've never loved doing something more.
Well, building the community that we're all building here, folks like you are absolutely integral. And if we keep our voices open, above board, and look for what can be done and recognize where we're hitting a wall. And that's what happens. We hit a wall and give up.
Well,
a wall and get mad and
right.
react.
And what is it? Doing the very definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over and over again and expect a different result?
Right. Right.
You know, sometimes you're not going to bust the wall down. Sometimes you go around the wall.
Right.
Bonnie, what a pleasure.
Oh.
What a real pleasure hearing from you.
Thank you, Bob. Good to talk to you.
You take care.
Oh, okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Hope to hear from you again soon.
Thanks.
Wow. I mean, sometimes it's just like just ice water. You know, alive. Phew. So we're gonna take a break, and I'm going to take stock. If you want to jump in during the last half hour, please do so. Aw, Agnes. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Where's the streetwise Hercules to fight the rising waters? Isn't there a white knight upon a fiery steed? Late at night, I toss and I turn and I dream of what I need. Be
was a level-headed dancer on the road to alcohol. And I was just a soldier on the way to Montreal. Well, she pressed her chest against me about the time the jukebox broke. Yeah, she gave me a peck on the back of the neck. And these are the words she spoke. Blow up your TV. Throw away your paper. Go to the country. Build you a home.
Agnes. Agnes hates John Prine.
Yes, I do.
We have a problem with that. So, yeah, we're having a dispute. I hate Evanescence. Agnes hates John Prine.
No, actually, Agnes can't control the controllers tonight.
Honey, you slammed that fader down like you wanted it to keep on going through the floor.
Better the fader than you, dear.
True enough. Okay, last licks on this Wednesday prayer meeting edition. Story from our friend Chris in Alabama. Another person caught kitty diddling from the religion industry, this one in Africa, in Nairobi. A woman working for the... it's the Presbyterians' turn this time. Charged with molesting oodles and oodles and oodles of little prepubescent boys. Ack. You know what? Well, okay. Next. Headline, Bill tightens rules for two-parent welfare families. I mentioned this earlier. The wide-ranging spending cut bill scheduled for final House vote on, well, you know, today, and it passed, includes provisions toughening welfare regulations, you know, because we're not tough enough on the poor. We're not quite mean enough to the poor. Are we? Including work requirements on two-parent welfare families that experts say is almost impossible to meet. Well, you know. It holds adults in two-parent families to a higher work standard than those in single-parent families. A welfare expert with the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities in Washington said it was the height of hypocrisy for congressional Republicans with the acquiescence of President Bush to promote policies that would give states incentives to discriminate against two-parent families. She said, "This isn't a pro-family policy." Surprise. Nothing George Bush does. Nothing the Republican Party does is pro-family policy. It's what Bonnie was talking about. It's the height of corporate hatred and corporate greed. We all got a big giggle out of it last night when Dear Leader said that he wanted a congressional ban on human-animal hybrids. And we all know now that what that is about is... the science that allowed, well, you know, where'd the polio vaccine come from, or smallpox vaccine? Human-animal hybridization. Sure it did. But not a word, no, heck no, not a word about the Frankenfoods generated and created by Monsanto. And yeah, it's already a matter of law in Iraq that Iraqi farmers in the Fertile Crescent, the place, you know, thousands upon thousands of years ago, well, okay, for everybody but the fundies, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years ago, hunter-gatherers walked through tall, waving grass fields, and they carried baskets. And as they walked along, they shook the grass stalks, and some seeds fell off, and some seeds didn't. The seeds that fell off, they took home, they dried, they ground them into flour, or some, you know, meal of some sort, and they made bread. And right after they figured out how to make bread, they figured out how to make beer. And in the process of generation after generation after generation, walking through those fields, shaking those stems, and the fewer seeds fell off. Why? Well, it was the very first genetic manipulation of crops. And what those early hunter-gatherers had done walking through the fields with their baskets is they had genetically preselected for grasses whose grains remained on the stalk instead of shaking loose. And a few more generations passed by, and they found themselves actually having to actively plant those grains. And farming was born. And they were, and now we have created a law in Iraq and forced it on the Iraqi people that tells Iraqi farmers what kind of grain they can plant, what kind of frankenfoods they can, food crops they can plant as produced by ConAgra or Archer Daniels Midland or Monsanto. You go down, corn was first propagated in the Valley of Mexico. You go down there now and you can find the genotypes of Monsanto's Frankencorns in the very birthplace of corn propagation. Now, I'm not going to get all science fiction-y on you, but you know what that means, right? That means that Monsanto is literally sowing the seeds of famine. Sowing the seeds of famine. So with that as a backdrop, you get this policy from the Republicans in Congress. The bill that was passed in the House provides that the adults in 90% of the two-parent welfare families must, between them, put in 35 hours a week, either working, training for work, or participating in other job-related activities. Now, that's not anywhere near what's required of a single-parent household. So, just as the farmers in the Fertile Crescent thousands upon thousands of years ago didn't mean to pre-select for a form of grain that would hang on to the stalk, forcing them to work harder and start farming, so too, you know, we've got a government here, a bunch of caring, compassionate Republicans who are unintentionally, or perhaps intentionally, I don't know, pre-selecting for the single-parent home. Do you understand? Of course you do. I promised I'd quit saying that. For all their talk about family values. Family values, you know, Sam Brownback and that disgusting crowd. For all their talk about supporting the family, and, you know, they want these tougher divorce laws where you have to go through 18 weeks of counseling to make sure that, so the woman can make sure she really is tired of having the snot beaten out of her. For all of that, we're pre-selecting at least among the poor for single-parent households. Oh, you know, you can't swing a dead cat in the right-wing Republican world without finding another study about how deleterious the single-family household is on the American family and how it contributes to youth violence and youth dropouts and, you know, bad children. And yet, it's what they want. Poor people are desperate enough as it is. They don't need any more desperation forced upon them. If they have managed to live in a two-parent home, if they've managed to hold that together, today the Republican Congress of the United States said, screw you, one of you has to leave. Because then it'll be easier to keep feeding your family. Everybody knows I'm a movie buff. Show of hands here. Sophie's Choice. Sophie's Choice. You got to go all the way through the movie to find out what hellish choice Sophie made. This is Sophie. He's going to call. Mavis! Mavis, get in here. George is going to call, he's going to call George Bush a Nazi again. I don't have to. These guys aren't Nazis. They're nothing approaching Nazis. Because, oh boy, talk about sickening. At least among the families that they weren't actively exterminating, the Nazis cared about... Oh, stop it, Bob. These guys are much worse, much more awful, much more insidious than any Nazi. They are fascists. They most assuredly are. And poor people... Yeah, what did we find out on November the 2nd or November the 3rd or November the 4th, 2004? 19% of the abjectly poor in West Virginia voted for George Bush?
Because he's a godly man.
Democratic Senators Barack Obama and Evan Bayh have said they will introduce legislation in the Senate to repeal the strict work standard for two-parent families once it reaches them. Anybody got the final vote tally on this thing?
Yeah, but I have to be nice.
That line from the State of the Union last night.
Each year of my administration, I have reduced non-discretionary, non-security spending.
Well, that sounds fun, doesn't it?
Yeah. We're in a very small room.
It just means, but what does it mean? It means that we've made it a little bit rougher, a little bit harder, a little bit crueler, a little bit tougher on poor people. And what was it? The religious right was asked about the protests held by evangelical Democrats complaining about the House budget. And they said, compared to abortion, that's really not one of our priorities right now.
Meanwhile,
there was a new tape out yesterday from Ayman al-Zawahiri. And we know he's happy and comfortable because he told us that he talked about the 17 peasants that George Bush had missiled to death inside the sovereign territory of Pakistan. You might have missed this part watching Paula Zahn. Al-Qaeda's number two... He called him number two. Al-Qaeda's number two, Ayman al-Zawahiri, has called on U.S. President George W. Bush to, again, I think it's turning into a drinking game, guys, has called on him to convert to Islam. Ayman Zawahiri, this is a quote from the Al Jazeera newsreader. Ayman Zawahiri called on President George W. Bush to convert to Islam in the video recording received by Al Jazeera. Quote, if you obey, you will be a brother in religion and God will pardon the past. George, don't. Okay, you've already screwed up Christianity in America, okay? Because I've said 1,000 times, if I've said it once, that if you got George Bush and you sat him down across from Osama bin Laden and they actually started talking about what they really believed, I mean, the next thing you know, they'd be pouring tea and singing old fraternity songs. You know, the whole thing with the women wearing the beekeeper suits and the, no, you know, well, the rules for everybody but them. You know, no, the no fun club.
I don't think so.
This is the... This is... No, George, please don't. Because, you know, if Robertson, Falwell, that gang... I mean, this, we got to do the religion thing to end the show. This is, after all, a prayer meeting. We don't need the religious, the fundamentalist Christians here figuring out that the fundamentalist Muslims share more in common with them than the rest of the world does, or, you know, the normal people do. We don't need that. So, at this point... okay, maybe we do need to, like, attack him with missiles or something before he convinces George Bush to convert to Islam and sit down and start planning. Oh, dear God. If you obey, you will be a brother in... Can you imagine Osama bin Laden, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and George Bush looking at each other and saying, "Brother!" My God in heaven. But they've made the overture. I can't see George Bush learning to read Arabic. Can't see him wearing the little hats either. Can't see him making the trip to... Wait a minute, he's already made the trip to Saudi Arabia. Oh my God, it's worse than we thought. Look, the show's over. We're done for the night. Thank you very much, all of you who called, who listened, who shared your time, your precious finite time with us. It always means so very much. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes, except for the part where she hated John Prine and just slammed the bumper music down, you know, in a fit of pique and passion. It was announced, of course, by Brian Reznor and engineered by Randy Kerbway. Our good friend, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He maintains the stream of this program as well as the archives of this and many, many other liberal talk programs. He has served over 5 million hours of liberal talk and has never sent a bill for a penny of it. Remember him because he is in the midst of a fundraising drive. And, of course, the show is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they're building the American dream. And finally, always, always... RMR. It's all for you.